You may recognise these fine fellows. In a few weeks' time now, isn't it? I can't remember how long it is now. It feels like it's very, very close, so I'm sure it will seem like a long time to us. But it will not be long before we are called to place our trust, place our confidence in one of these gentlemen, or maybe someone else, to be responsible for the leadership of this country for the next 5 years or so. I'm not going to ask you which one of these gentlemen. We shouldn't tease them, should we? Where would we be without people willing to stand up and do something like this? It's probably the most difficult job, or the second most difficult job after being Archbishop of Canterbury in this country. We need someone to do it, and it's actually easy to be cynical, isn't it? So although we may jest, we shouldn't take it seriously when it comes to the real thing. But I want to ask you a question. When you vote, you have to put your trust in someone, don't you? Your local MP or your local councillor, and ultimately in whoever is running the country. At least a degree of confidence. So a question for you. I'm looking for some answers here. What inspires you to place your confidence, or at least your comparative confidence, in one of these gentlemen? Or someone like him. What would you be looking for? Yes, Naomi. That they do what they say. So you're looking for perhaps a record that they've said they would do such and such, and they have done it. And possibly that they haven't said something, or that they haven't sort of left something out and then done it. No references to anything in our current... No, I don't know what I'm possibly referring to. Yes. Integrity. That's right. Integrity. That they're not ripping us off. That they really are who they say they are. Yep. Anything else? What else? You're looking for some agreement with their basic stance. You're not going to find 100%, are you? But their basic stance, what they stand for, you can have confidence in. Yep. Competence to run the economy and other significant responsibilities. Yeah, competence is important, isn't it? That they can actually do the job. Doesn't matter how much integrity they've got if they're hopeless. Then you're not going to vote for them, are you? Yep. Truthful. Yep. Honest. Yep. You'd rather they said, we made a mistake there, didn't you, than that they covered it up, for example. Yeah. They listen. Yeah. So it makes a difference when people say, yep. Something you know about them. So sort of evidence from their wider lives, you mean? Yeah, so you might have confidence in them because you can see a basic integrity in the pattern that their life has followed. Any other suggestions, yeah? Willingness to do what's necessary. There has to be, yeah, they can't be all fluffy, can they? Someone's going to be the leader. They have to be tough enough to do the job. Sometimes something difficult. Any other thoughts? Do they have to be a good speaker? Does it help if they are? It does, doesn't it? I mean, where would we have been if Winston Churchill was exactly the same man but couldn't give a good speech? Anything else? Any other thoughts? I mean, the list could go on and on. You'd look at their church, their track record, wouldn't you? You'd also want to look at the team around them. You don't want someone who's very good by themselves, but nobody around them. All kinds of things, yeah? It's a simple point here, but when you place your trust, you're looking at a whole range of different things that evoke in you a sense of confidence. Some of them are things that you could actually evaluate in an intellectual kind of way, measure. Others of them are more intuitive, less obvious, partly to do with who you are as well as who they are. Well, the basic point that we're exploring tonight is that from a spiritual point of view, Jesus inspired those who knew him best to place their confidence in him. And place all their confidence in him. Not just like a comparative, well, he's a bit better than the rest. They were willing to place 100% trust in this man called Jesus. Now let's see how that fits into the pattern of what this... course is about. How's that one? Okay, you remember we saw this last week. I have slightly jokingly called this the Strictly Christianity course, in which we can get in step with Jesus. You know the program, don't you? I've never seen it, but apparently you a novice celebrity goes dancing with a dance expert, and the expert helps them with their steps in what seems like a very complex dance. Break it down and you get some fairly simple steps. It can be like that in the Christian faith. It can look from the outside incredibly complicated and difficult. But there are actually some simple steps that help us to understand. And with the right dance partner, with the right person who's able to guide you, it actually starts to make sense. There are some essential things which need to take place. Last week, we looked at the fact that you need to have an understanding of some facts to trust in Jesus, because it's not just a story. There are facts you can hold on to and believe in. Future weeks, we're going to look at feelings, how it actually feel about this whole business, and following what you have to do. Here we're looking at faith, which is about this whole idea of trusting in one particular man. Now, why are we doing it this way? Well, I'm going to just lift up the bonnet a bit and show you how I'm thinking. And this is perhaps for those of you who are Christians and thinking, why is Tom trying to present the Christian faith in this sort of way? You see at the top there, that's how we imagine our thinking is. Or many of us do anyway. We like to think that we think in a good, solid, straight line. Somebody presents us with some facts. We evaluate the facts and they evoke in us a response. And then we decide what to do. Nice straight line of thought. Hands up if that's the kind of thinking that you commonly undertake when you make a decision. Oh, wow, that's very bold of you. Because I suggest that actually for most of us, our brain is more like this. I suspect that for most of us, when it comes to making a big decision, there's a whole world of different things going on. Yes, of course, there's our facts. Yes, of course, there's our decision-making processes. But there's our feelings, there's our innate beliefs, there's our intuitions, there's our cultural norms, there's our habits, what we're used to. There's our desires in the background pushing us one way or the other, often subconsciously. And so often our thoughts are not as neat and tidy as they are up there. Anyway, I think that's the case. We'll find out, won't we? Now, many very good courses introducing Christianity present the Christian faith wonderfully well. Courses like Christianity Explored and Alpha and all those things. No big complaints about them at all. But they do tend to sort of go in a straight line, like this. And sometimes I think it's helpful to, instead, go in a bit of a circle. Because our thoughts tend to go round and round. And look in with different perspectives on the same essential truth. So that's the difference, if you like. Instead of walking in a straight line through the gospel, what we're doing is taking a circle of steps around, looking in from different angles. So last time we looked from the intellectual angle, trying to understand the miracles. Now we're looking from the sort of personal angle, trying to engage with Jesus. That's what we're trying to do. And I don't pretend that we are going to cover as much material as those other courses do, because they're 7 steps long and mine's only 4. So we're acknowledging that life is a bit messy, but that there are some helpful steps to take us through it. And in the course, we use this diagram, because we're moving from facts to faith, to feelings, to following. We can go round and round that loop as much as we like, but start to home in on Jesus. So, faith. Now, I put that as almost the crux of things here, because faith involves both our mind and our heart, both our mind, our thinking, and our feeling. And we can have a confidence in Jesus and the truths about him, the facts about him. We can start to think, okay, maybe some of this is true, but that's not the same as believing or trusting in him. And faith is extremely important. Let me just show you from that Bible verse that we read earlier, that passage where that man came to Jesus in the dark and saw some light. This verse here, the verse that we finished with, and it's immensely important. Some people think this is perhaps the most powerful statement Christian faith in the whole Bible. If you grasped this and understand it and really believed it, then you could call yourself a Christian. Because what this man learned was that for God so loved the world that he gave his only son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have eternal life. You see, the context here is that human beings need to be rescued. Human beings need to be saved. This is the core of the story that we're looking at from different angles. We're all in a mess. The essential bond between human beings and God has been broken by the way in which we have acted, the way in which we've chosen to act. We have broken off from him to do our own thing, left ourselves in the dark and without that essential life from God. The story of the Bible is how God breaks into that situation and rescues us. And he does that through sending Jesus, who died and rose again on the cross. We'll find out more about that as we go on. But that's how he did it. Now, faith is an absolutely crucial place in us being rescued from this mess, from the death of sin into the life of God. Because faith makes that link with Jesus, with God, again. It's hugely important. If you think about it, if we were making a religion up, we could have said, it could say, for God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son, that whoever belonged should not perish but have eternal life. Whoever belonged to the right church. It could say that, couldn't it, if we were making a religion up? Or we could say, for God so loved the world that he gave his only son so that whoever behaved like him should not perish but have eternal life. But it doesn't say that either. It says, who believes in him. So let's press on more deeply into how we can believe in Jesus. Remember these guys from last week? Who were they? Who are we referring to here? Just a little reminder for those who were there. Fishermen, yeah? Fishermen, that's right. First disciples, ordinary blokes working by the side of the river, by the side of the lake, should I say. And they are inspired by encountering Jesus, spending a few days with him, to completely change their lives and follow him. And the essential thing that does that is not the sight of miracles and things like that. They hadn't seen anything like that. It was spending a day or two with this person. They had a bit of background knowledge. Their religion taught them that a Messiah was coming, a rescuer was coming. But essentially, all it took for them to change their lives forever was a day or two with Jesus. What might it take for us? A day or two with Jesus? Or a bit more? Well, there certainly is more to go on. There were more encounters with people who met Jesus. More of those in the Bible. Let's look at some more. Here's the man that we've already heard about. His name was Nicodemus, remember? A very intelligent scholar, but someone who was completely in the dark because he did not understand the essential ideas of Jesus. A very important religious leader, who was completely in the dark about what mattered the most. Now, what sort of person did he encounter when he went to Jesus? Now, cast your mind back. He encountered someone who was very open to questions, wasn't he? He didn't always give the answer that was expected. He didn't even seem to be answering the same question, but he was open to the questions. He was someone who was there when he was needed. He was willing to meet in the middle of the night, if that's what this man Nicodemus needed to happen. He met someone who was immensely wise, someone who had great and powerful understanding and insights, and he could tell that they went far deeper than his religion had ever been. He also met someone who was a straight talker. someone who was willing to challenge him and wasn't deferential to the fact that actually, in terms of rank, Nicodemus came much higher. You also learn one more particular thing, something that we all need to grasp as well. Jesus said to him, "You must be born again." You maybe have heard that phrase before, have you? If you ever heard Billy Graham talking about being born again, it's one of the places where it's mentioned. Because, you see, there was a reason why Nicodemus was in the dark, in spite of the fact that he was very, very knowledgeable. And that is, to fully appreciate and understand Jesus, something has to happen to you. Something in your heart. It's not just about something that goes on in your brain as you process information. In fact, it's something that God does. That God can bring a spark of spiritual life into our hearts and into our minds. In fact, we need that to happen. That's why, in a sense, I don't get too stressed about this course and all these things. I love doing them. It's so exciting for me. Fantastic if people believe it. But in the end, there's something that God has to do. So I leave it to him and don't try and manipulate people into believing, because ultimately it's God who brings that about in people's hearts. So if you're someone who's finding this all baffling and it doesn't yet make sense to you, you know that maybe there's something worth pursuing, but you're not quite sure what it is or what it means, don't worry, because there's something God will do in your heart to bring it to light. What can you do, though? Well, people like Nicodemus found that this happened when they spent time with Jesus, when they encountered him. That's what they did in practice to become disciples. With their hearts open, their minds open, they found this process went on. And that's what we're encouraging you to do, really. Spend time with Jesus, looking at him and meeting with him, and seeing if this idea that you come alive spiritually happens for you when you're with him. Do a little experiment, if you like. See if that is the effect upon you. So here we go. Let's think about some other people, and this is where you do some work. Let's think about some other people in the book of John who encounter Jesus and find him to be a compelling person. And I'm going to ask you the question, what did these individuals perceive in Jesus that inspired them to follow in his footsteps? What did they see in him? What sort of person did they find to be? Now, as always, with these discussions, you can either just think and reflect upon one, or you can look at it together with your neighbour, or whoever you've come with, and you have about five or six minutes to think about it, and then we'll get some feedback so that we can all get other people's perspective. So here are three examples. I hope you can see. Up here is the story of a woman at a well who Jesus spent time with, she encountered him. And I'm wondering if people over on this left-hand side might have a look at that passage and see what it was about Jesus, what qualities of Jesus impacted her. Then here, in the centre, we have people used to do this at Surrey Chapel, did you know? Actually emulate this. It was part of a communion service. This is Jesus washing the feet of his disciples. So perhaps if you're in the centre here, you could look at the verses I've suggested at the bottom and see what kind of person Jesus emerges as in this event here. Then over here we have one more. This is the lady, you may have heard the story, a woman who was caught in adultery. Yeah? And again, Jesus is involved. And have a look at this and see if you can work out what sort of person he was and what kind of impression did he leave upon people there. Again, your neighbours can help you think that through. Okay, over to you. 5 or 6 minutes. A healthy hum of chatter is perfectly acceptable at this point. Well, let's think first of all, then, about this lady, first of all. A lady who Jesus met at a well and asked for a drink. And these verses here, actually, You don't need to look at those there. Okay, so Jesus asked her for a drink. But what in that encounter struck you about Jesus' character and personality? What was impressive to her about this man? So, woman, Samaritan, Samaritan Jews hated each other, yeah. So later on, that's right, so she got some actual information, didn't she, as well? Yeah. But in terms of the kind of person he was, there was a great gulf between her and him. The Jews and the Samaritans hated each other. Men and women didn't talk to her. A Jewish teacher wouldn't speak to a woman in public. Might speak to his wife at home, but not a woman in public. Yes, so Jesus was somebody willing to break barriers. He wasn't limited by the prejudices of his society. Yep. What else did the people notice? Yep, I see a hand up there. Let's ask you first. That's right. Yes, she was a loose woman in a very conservative society. And that's why she's getting water in the middle of the hot day. Normally you'd be getting water in the cool of the morning or the evening with your other female friends, chatting away. She's on her own. Jesus is there. He opens conversation with her very graciously. That's right. So he's willing to spend time with someone who is a loose woman, but he also is steering her towards a better life. Now, hand up here, Trevor. That's right. So she is so impressed by Jesus that in the space of one day, she's willing to go back to people who despised her and say, this man is wonderful. So he didn't mince his words. He would tell her straight, but there was no doubt that there was love there. He wouldn't have been talking to her otherwise. And he asks for her for a drink. Because we all think that, oh, we're Christians, our job is to descend from on high and deliver the wonderful message to all those poor, benighted heathens and so on. You know, we have nothing to give. It's not like Jesus is quite happy to admit, I am thirsty and I haven't got a bucket. He starts from a position of weakness, doesn't he? Even though he has needs that this lady can fulfill for him. It's very humble of him to say, can you give me a drink, please? So he's a humble man. Great, okay, so we have a picture here of a man with all of these wonderful qualities that speak to people. Some of them beyond just what a good man he is, into touching on something more spectacular. Okay, move on to the next example. This is the story of how Jesus, after the Last Supper, washed his disciples' feet. An act of ultimate, well, you tell me. Humility, that's right. Yeah, or maybe a lack of sense of smell, but humility. It's Kathy. He sets them an example to follow. Yeah, he doesn't ask them to go somewhere that he's not willing to go himself. And you have to remember, where was he going to go the next day? To the cross. So he was willing to pay the ultimate price. Yeah? Humble, didn't tell people to go where he wasn't willing to go first. Anything else? That's right, that's the amazing thing, isn't it? They recognize him, treat him as the master, as the Lord, as the ultimate one, and yet he washes them. What an incredible combination that you can hold both of these things together. But Jesus managed it in a way that no one else possibly could. Because again, it's tough love, isn't it? Yeah. Tough talking. There's no doubt that he cares about Peter, but he doesn't mind slapping him down a bit in public here and now, because he knows in the end it's going to be worth... he's going to need it, yeah? It's going to be better for him. So again, we're seeing this incredible mixture of grace and love with strength and authority. He was someone willing to see himself as a servant, and of course, the next day he would prove the ultimate example of that when he died on the cross. We then have, going back, that's right, so a woman is accused of adultery, dragged before Jesus. And of course, what's going on? Who drags her? Pharisees, yes. And are they looking for a fair trial here? No. It's all a setup, isn't it? Yeah. Because they're thinking, he'll either say, let her go, in which case he's denying the law, and otherwise he'll say, kill her, in which case he's saying, because they'd be stoned to death, wouldn't they, in those days, for being adultery, in which case he's proving himself to be one of us, really. Yeah. So they're trying to trap him. Who's not there? The man. We should recognize that. After all, we are doing strictly Christianity with our dancing partners. Takes two to tango. And yes, for some strange reason, the man isn't there. Well, I never. Jesus is very, well, what qualities do you perceive in Jesus and the way he deals with this awkward situation? Yes, sir. Let's Susie first. Challenging. He knows how to challenge people. Writes on the ground. We don't know what he wrote, but some people probably think that probably he was writing a list of embarrassing words for those Pharisees who were calling for her to be killed. Words that he knew full well applied to them. And those without sin cast the first stone, and of course they disappear. Very, very sharp, isn't he? Yeah? Yeah. Great wisdom, yeah. He gives people space, doesn't he? Yeah, yeah. He lets people dig their own hole in this case. Yep. Or find the way out of one. Yes, Adrian. Forgiving, yep. He shows incredible grace and forgiveness to this lady. Yeah. Has anyone condemned you? But neither do I. They don't even care about the law of adultery. It's not as if they're bothered, really, about her committing adultery. It's more about trying to score points over Jesus, isn't it? They can see that. Yep, Jesus is never fooled. He's never a mug. Still straight talking. Go and leave your life of sin. Yeah, he's not, you know, that's right. It's not empty acceptance, is it? It's now change. Now, in all of these cases, we finding here a man who is immensely impressive in every dimension. Yet, he is a man. He is a human being. He's not some aloof and distant angelic figure, a computer, or this is a human being who is expressing human qualities to their utmost. And through him, we're gaining hints and insights that something more is going on. Here's one more picture. This is a reminder of the ultimate truths about Jesus. Because he died and rose again, and people continued to encounter him after he had died and risen. This here is Mary, and I'm not actually sure whether it's meant to be Mary his mother or Mary Magdalene, one of the many Marys. Incidentally, one of the reasons we can believe the Bible is that there's lots of Marys in it. If you make a story up, you give everyone different names, don't you? So it's not confusing. Isn't that true? Have you ever read a novel where all the women are called Mary? No, because that's daft if you're making a story up. The only reason all the words, is that not a valid point? I think it is. All those Marys prove that there's truth there. Okay, anyway, fairly minor, but anyway. But the point is, this was someone who, in a human way, continued to be there for people after he died and risen again. And that actually is the foundational truth of the Christian faith. All these other things go feeding into it, but this one here, that the qualities they perceived in Jesus as a human being in the normal way continued and were expanded when they met him as a resurrected Lord and Saviour. They met not only tenderness and wisdom and all those things, but a clear supernatural dimension to who he was. So what are we saying? That this man was ultimately the most impressive person that you could ever meet. People either loved him or hated him, depending on what they were looking for. And I suspect that in this room today, in amongst the examples that we've seen, and if not in other examples that I could give, each one of us would find in Jesus these qualities and more, the very things that we need, that we are looking for. Maybe you are someone who knows what it's like to be in the dark, just not understanding, struggling to grasp the truth, and need some light from him. Maybe you know what it's like to be on the outside of things, like that woman at the well. You know, alienated from culture and society, perhaps sometimes by your own efforts, by your own deeds. Maybe you're someone like the disciples, keen to get on with things and do things, but not quite sure what. And you need someone to actually do something for you first. Maybe you're like the fallen woman who needs forgiveness, aware of your own sin and failing and need forgiveness. Or maybe what you need is hope in the face of death, the fear and horror of judgment. But perhaps there is a way through and out of that. All these things can be found in Jesus.